have you heard that college kids today are all having promiscuous, casual sex, that they're looking for so-called hookups all the time and not really looking for meaningful relationships, and that they are doing so happily? Well, our guest says, don't believe everything you hear. We will talk with the author of American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network, and I am interested in hearing from you if you are a college student and what your experience has been. Do you believe there is a hookup culture at your college campus? What questions do you have about how this came to be and why it came to be? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Lisa Wade, Associate Professor of Sociology at Occidental College. She is the author of American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for being with us. So what exactly is a hookup?
It's a great question to start with. If you ask students what it is, they won't have a very good answer. So the researchers don't have a very good answer for you either. It's some kind of sexual contact. The extent of it is questionable. And the idea is that it has no future implications. So no, you won't necessarily hook up with them again, and you certainly won't necessarily have any kind of romantic relationship. So in practice, it ranges from anything to just kissing one another on a dance floor all the way to going back to a dorm and having sex.
So how is this different than back in my day, the one-night stand?
It's not that much different, except for it's expected that all college students do it. So the real shift is not necessarily the behavior itself, but the idea that whereas you could have a one-night stand if you wanted, 20, 30 years ago, now it's expected that everyone be constantly seeking one-night stands. And so even if students aren't doing it, and plenty of students aren't, they often feel like there's something wrong with them for not wanting to.
Yeah, and I just wanted to clarify that, because we have some, I believe, college students listening to us now. I hope sometimes we hear from them, but for the most part, we're talking to their parents and their grandparents. So I want to make sure that we have our definition here. There's been a lot of debate in academia and in the media over whether this so-called hookup culture is a good thing or a bad thing. But you say that debate misses the point. How does it miss the point?
Well, I think it's possible to think about many different potential hookup cultures that we could see on college campuses. And we could also imagine a world in which a hookup culture competed with a bunch of other sexual cultures that were also present on college campuses. Both of those things, both sort of reforming our hookup culture to be a little bit kinder and gentler and making it compete with other cultures, would probably be a good change on college campuses. But simply thinking about whether or not the behavior itself is good or bad is probably not particularly useful.
Yeah. So you touched on it, but are today's college students really hooking up at the rates that we've been led to believe?
Not at all. Mm-hmm. It turns out that the average number of hookups for a graduating senior, according to them themselves, is 8. So that's about one a semester. And by the way, a lot of this is happening in the freshman year and even in the first couple weeks of the freshman year. That number, 8, is brought down by the fact that a third of students will report zero hookups in college. So a lot of students are opting out entirely. And then a lot of students are hooking up maybe once a semester, maybe twice a semester, but hardly more than that.
Yeah, so are those that are not hooking up, I don't know, somehow feeling that there's something wrong with them?
Yes. They often feel like they're missing out on what they would call the whole college experience. They're kind of doing it wrong by choosing not to participate. And a lot of times they are actually interested in having sexual contact with their peers. But the ways in which hookup culture requires them to do that is so unappetizing to them that they just opt out entirely. So in other words, most of them aren't doing it out of some kind of moral principle where they object to casual sex. It's just that the casual sex that's happening looks kind of intimidating and scary and unpleasant and unkind to them.
So where did this idea of hookup culture come from?
Oh, it's such a wonderful question. It's a complicated story. It has something to do with whenever we throw together in a very densely populated way a whole bunch of like-minded people for whom marriage isn't a goal, and sexual freedom is an idea. We kind of get hookup cultures in those sorts of scenarios. A comparative one might be the gay enclaves of the 1970s. We also see this real change in America starting with the movements of the 1970s. And back then, one of the things feminists wanted for women was for them to be able to be free sexually. And as we as a country kind of tried to decide what liberation looks like for women, for better or worse, what we kind of decided on was that women's liberation was our ability to do what men do. And so we started to teach our daughters, we started as early as the 1970s, that if you want to be liberated, if you want to be not just, like, it's okay if you want to be girly, but if you're boyish, well, darn, that's kind of amazing and awesome, and we're going to be extra proud of you when you start mixing in masculine traits and characteristics into your personality and goals. And so we started teaching our daughters to embrace masculinity and actually, in some ways, flee the feminine. And so when those daughters start to get to college in the late 1990s or so, they often applied that logic to sexuality. If it was better to get good grades in math than English, if it was somehow cooler to want to play with trucks and engineering toys than Barbie, if it was somehow better to be a soccer player than a cheerleader, then it's somehow better to prefer casual sex over relationships.
Yeah. So the notion that this would be empowering to women if they had, you know, the hookup cultures or relationships rather than something else. And it's not, though, is it?
Well, it's not often how it plays out. About 15% of students on campus really, truly, genuinely enjoy hookup culture. They are composed of both men and women, gay and straight. And they, when we actually study them, the more they hook up, the happier they are. There is a minority of students for whom hookup culture really suits them well. But the rest of students on campus are at best ambivalent about it. And this is both men and women. But the women I talk to, they tend to be, over time, they tend to become more frustrated with it. So if men are disappointed by hookup culture, women are often disgusted or traumatized by it.
Yeah. So, who is this culture? Who are those who are I guess participating in this and really liking it?
Well, the students who like it the most, on average, and everything else being equal, tend to be students who are privileged on any all of the social hierarchies in America. So, the students who like it the most are more likely than not to be white students, men, heterosexual, conventionally attractive, from a wealthy or at least comfortable economic background, able-bodied, cisgendered. So the students that like it the best tend to be students who are kind of at the apex of all of our social hierarchies at once.
Yeah, and why do you think that is?
Well, I think it's because those same students generally have control, or at least disproportionate control, over the social life of their peers. So they're kind of engineering the social life on campus in ways that suit them best. And to give you a very iconic example, it's not like this on every campus, but this would be an example of that, is, you know, because we raised the drinking age to 21 in America, this happens between 1984 and 1987. When college students get to campus, if they want to party and party hard, like everyone from their parents to the movies to marketing tells them they should, then there's really, on a lot of campuses, one primary place to go. They can't go to bars and clubs unless they're willing to risk getting a fake ID and have the money to do so. They can't party in their dorms anymore because now that's illegal. Sororities aren't allowed to throw parties with alcohol. So where they go is the fraternities. The fraternities tend to be occupied by the people at the apex of all those social hierarchies. And so they engineer the party life of the campus around their own preferences.
So how much does the hookup culture play into at least the widespread or seemingly growing problem of sexual assaults on campus?
Well, hookup culture is premised on the idea that you don't have feelings for the person you're having sexual contact with. And not only that, but that you're not going to have feelings and that deep down you don't really care about them. And what that does is it sets up sexual interactions that are based on the actual sort of assertive performance of, we're going to do this, but don't mistake this for me caring about you. And this is dangerous because it means that we're having sexual contact where you're not supposed to be really being considerate of the other person's feelings, of their desires, and possibly even their consent. And so the students are engaging in sexual activity that is sort of pushed toward that line where it goes from carelessness to callousness to cool and then into criminal. And it's very difficult for us, it's a lot for us to ask of young people, often who are drinking, to be able to have sexual encounters where they don't care about one another, but never actually violate the other person's preferences. And so then hookup culture tends to both camouflage the serial predators who are really intent on exploiting their peers, because it's harder to tell the difference between criminal and cruel. It's difficult sometimes to actually see what's going on when it's perfectly normal to be uncaring. And it also catalyzes sexual assault among people who otherwise in other circumstances would probably never actually behave in ways that are criminally sexual. When they're being told it's okay to be uncaring, then sometimes they slip over that line.
We are talking with Lisa Wade. She is the author of American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus. We are talking about this hookup culture, how it came to be, and who is participating in the hookup culture, and what it means, why it matters. And we're welcoming your questions for her, and we're welcoming your own experiences, maybe your own concerns. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about American Hookup, the new culture of sex on campus. We're talking with sociologist Lisa Wade, and we're welcoming your thoughts and your questions about hookup culture. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Mallory in Oshkosh is with us. Hi, Mallory.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm just calling in to tell you my experience. I was actually an older college student. I recently graduated a couple years ago. It seemed like to me, at least in my circle of friends, we're looking more for relationships, not for the one-night stands.
No, and when you say you're older, Mallory, just by a little or a lot?
Not by a lot. No, I graduated when I was 29 years old.
Mm-hmm. Is this a younger millennial thing, Lisa Wade?
No, it turns out that the majority of college students want relationships. One study found that 73% of men and 70% of women said that they would prefer to be in a relationship than hook up. But most students also think that all of their peers feel differently. So there's a lot of confusion about among college students about what each of them wants. So it would be not at all surprising that a student would actually prefer a relationship. What happens on college campuses today, though, is that relationships, if they start, usually start through a series of hookups. So students who are seeking relationships have to sort of go through this process of pretending like they're not and having sexual contact that is ostensibly meaningless and without any romantic intent, and then just cross their fingers that it will turn out to be romantic. And so that's how most relationships end up forming. Another study found that 50% of students that were hooking up were doing it in a utilitarian way, in the hopes that it would turn into a relationship.
Yeah, but it usually doesn't?
No, it usually doesn't. Most hookups don't turn into relationships, but most relationships do come out of hooking up.
Yeah. So I meant to ask you earlier, in order to gather information for the book, you did ask your students, I believe, to voluntarily provide some personal information to you in order to understand their experiences. Talk more about how you conducted your research.
Yeah, the students in the book, well, first of all, there's a lot of research on hookup culture from all kinds of social scientists doing all kinds of methods. So we have a really clear picture of what's going on college campuses today. What I wanted for the book was to give students a platform to really tell their stories and sort of fill in all the gaps in the quote-unquote data. So I asked students to fill out journals, turn them in to me once a week, and let me know, what are you experiencing? How are you feeling about it? And so they could talk about whatever they wanted to. I didn't force them to reveal anything personal that they didn't want to reveal. And we did that for a full semester in their freshman year.
Yes, and from what you've learned through the research, and we touched on this, who does hookup culture include and who does it not include?
Well, hookup culture, you know, if the goal is not to hook up with someone you like, then the criteria has to be something different. And what hookup culture suggests to students is that the most important criteria for a hookup partner is their status on campus. So what the goal is to hook up with someone where you can go the next morning and tell your friends and they'll be impressed because you hooked up with someone that is considered widely attractive and you know, they might say hookup worthy. So if status is what is sort of driving partner choice decisions, then it allows all of our biases to come in and start shaping the erotic marketplace. So suddenly, racism and fatphobia and classism and all of those American sins, right, start shaping the erotic marketplace on campus. And that's okay for students who are at the top of these hierarchies, but it's deeply unpleasant for many of the other students on campus.
Yeah, and so why do you say it's deeply unpleasant for, let's say, minority students or those who are not considered, I guess, hookup worthy?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's very intimidating to be judged on your looks all the time, no matter who you are. That can be very intimidating. And when students know that part of the reason that they're being judged badly is because our standard of beauty is white supremacist, I mean, students of color are pretty smart about how this works. And that doesn't make them feel good, and for obvious reasons.
Yeah. So I'd talk about differences between how men and women approach hookup culture.
Well, men and women tend to both be really, most men and women are excited about the possibility of sexual contact with their peers, even casual sexual contact with their peers when they get to campus. It has become kind of a rite of passage in America to go to college and have casual sex. And so most students tend to be excited about that. And then a lot of students find that it kind of isn't the, first of all, that there's not as much sex going on as they thought, and that the sex that they are having isn't as much fun as they thought. And so that tends to be something that happens to both men and women. But the hookup script, the ways in which hookups tend to play out, does benefit men more than women. So women are seen as inherently more desperate, inherently more relationally oriented. So it's believed that it's important after a hookup to be particularly unkind to women afterwards, so that they don't get any ideas about a relationship starting. Within the hookup, it's more likely that women will experience less sexual pleasure, especially if you measure by orgasm. So there's an orgasm gap between men and women on college campuses in hookups, the same one we saw in the 1950s when Kinsey did his research, and the same one we've seen ever since. And there's a small percentage of men on campus who actually, part of the game of hookup culture involves treating women badly in bed. And so those men are hooking up disproportionately more than other men. And when women encounter those men, that can be a very troubling and possibly traumatic experience. When you add the risk of sexual assault into that mix, it's not necessarily a safe playground for women.
Yeah. You also write that about a third of students will graduate without hooking up a single time, and there are plenty of abstainers from hookup culture. But again, talk a little bit more on how that affects their college experience.
Yeah, they're a really interesting group. They're a very large minority, a third of students. And what's interesting about their experience is that they often are rather unaware that each other exists. There's another book called Paying for the Party where they describe these students who don't party and hook up, as isolates. They are isolated from their peers. If they decide to stay in on Friday and Saturday nights instead of go partying, then they may be sitting in their dorm room listening to a large percentage of their peers running up and down the halls and pre-partying and getting ready and hooting and hollering and going out to the party and then coming back drunker and louder. Those students are so much more visible to them than the other person down the hall who's also quietly sitting in their dorm room deciding not to go out that night. So a lot of the abstainers, especially those who abstain from parties as well as hooking up, tend to be incredibly isolated, have a really difficult time making friends, and this hurts them both in terms of their well-being and their academic performance.
Yeah. We are talking with Lisa Wade. She is the author of American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus. So what do you think about what you're hearing? Does this surprise you at all? Are you living this experience on a college campus? Are you a college student? What is your impression of the hookup culture on campus? Are you the parent or a grandparent of a college student? How concerned are you? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We have Adrian who emailed, and she writes, I took my teenage daughter for her first gynecological appointment this week. Our female doctor had a very open discussion with us about sexual activity with young people. She let us know that over the December 2016 break, she had college-age clients come in while they were home from vacation, basically talking about college orgy parties, the 60s-style love parties, plutonic and casual sex, no commitment. And then she writes, so it must be happening? ? Lisa?
I think that the traditional orgy isn't as common. That is certainly not happening all the time. And there are lots of students who actually would like that. They're not getting that at all. It certainly does happen. But most of the hooking up that happens on campus is to students who hook up usually at beginning at a party and then sometimes go back to the dorm together, to a house together. Occasionally there's threesomes, but the full-blown orgies, definitely that's not an everyday occurrence on college campuses.
Right. It seems like because of the all the talk about hookup culture, that incoming students may have an expectation of, how to put the easy sex, frequent sex, and when that doesn't happen, there are problems. What about that?
Yeah, some students are disappointed that there's not more. One of my students, she says that when she was anticipating college, she thought it would be, quote-unquote, a big four-year orgy. So there's that orgy idea again, and then discovered that it wasn't quite like that at all. And most of the sexual activity that does happen tends to happen right at the beginning of school when everyone's trying to enact this new college identity that they're putting on as first-year students. So certainly, there's the news accounts that tend to focus on more titillating stories. There's the propaganda from colleges themselves that tend to advertise themselves as places where students will have a really exciting social life, more so even than having a really exciting educational life. And there's the marketing of people like the alcohol industry, who continues to try to convince America and has been doing so ever since Animal House in 1978. The alcohol companies have been trying to convince Americans that the best way to get through college is to be drunk much of the time. So there's a lot of messages students are getting about what college life is like that turn out to be inaccurate.
Yeah, your book says that this book explains where we are and how we got here, but it's not asking how do we go back, but instead where do we go from here? So we don't want to go back?
Well, no. I think a lot of parents, for example, their gut instinct is to encourage young people to form monogamous relationships instead of participating in casual sex. And I understand this gut instinct, but premarital monogamous relationships are themselves a brand new cultural thing. We didn't see that kind of activity amongst young people until the 1950s. We called it back then going steady. Mm-hmm. And the reason going steady becomes a thing in America is because so many young men died in World War II or married foreign women or experimented with homosexuality and decided not to come back and be heterosexual anymore. That young women in America were afraid that they may not ever marry. And in fact, the New York Times and Good Housekeeping was putting out these incredibly dire warnings that millions of American women would die alone because there were no men left. So going steady emerges as a strategy to try to, for women to try to protect themselves in this scary moment where there's a dearth of men. So going steady is new. And certainly going steady is no protection against the kind of bad things that can happen to people. So the feminists of the 1970s and since have put a lot of work into pointing out that marriage is the context for spousal homicide and domestic violence and marital rape. Being in a monogamous relationship doesn't protect young people from bad things. So I think in going forward, one of the things we need to be teaching our young people is not if you make the right choice, you deserve to be treated well, but you deserve to be treated well no matter what choice you make. And right now in hookup culture, the reason that we're seeing such a problem with casual sex is that students have internalized the idea that if it's casual, they are not entitled to care. And I think that's a myth we need to bust.
We have full lines now, so let's take some calls from Tracy in Madison first. Hi, Tracy.
Hi there. How are you?
Good. What is your story to share?
I was in college in the late 80s and early 90s, and there was definitely a hookup culture then as well. And, when you go to college not really knowing who you are, and you think that you're empowering to have casual relationships and casual sex, it's really just a self-exploitation and a self-objectification. I received nothing empowering or edifying from those hookups. And when I look back on them, it's very disturbing to me. And also just thinking about how very gray that line becomes between date rape and consensual sex, because alcohol is so often involved. And you mentioned that desperation, and that was exactly me, desperate for attention, desperate touch, and none of that gave me anything that readied me for maturity or the world or to be a strong and confident woman in the future.
Lisa?
That is not a universal, but a really, really common experience for women in hookup culture. And she's absolutely right that alcohol is the number one, we call it party rape now, the number one party rape drug is alcohol. It's absolutely used that way. And so it's dangerous. Men are looking to exploit women who they often feed alcohol. And that is absolutely a very, very common experience for young people on campuses.
Let me go to Melissa in Madison next. Hi, Melissa.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. My comment is that the idea that this is new, and I echo what the previous caller said. I went to college in California between 1986 and 1990, and we called it scamming. And I was in a sorority, and fortunately, when I was a freshman on my dorm floor while drinking, one of the guys on my floor tried to trap me in his room. And I learned very early on not to drink too much and also to be careful who I hang out with because of that predatory behavior. And no one, we were not a campus where people, it was a campus of 18,000 people. It was very rare for people to have long-term committed relationships. It was really about the hooking up or the scamming. And I saw it as really, I didn't participate in that because I didn't want to be taken advantage of. I didn't want to be preyed upon in that way. So now I'm the parent of college kids, and so I share these stories with them, tell them to warn them to be careful about drinking and the people they're around. And we had sexual assault on campus then, too, so this isn't new.
Yeah, what scamming, have you heard of that, Lisa?
Well, I would say that in terms of whether or not it's new, the thing that is new isn't necessarily that things like scamming that are happening on college campuses, but the idea that everyone on campus feels like they have to be doing that in order to fit in and be normal. And when exactly that transition happened, the transition from there being campuses on which there is hooking up to campuses on which everyone is expected to hook up, that's a little fuzzy, and it probably starts first on the coast and at the big party schools and amongst some certain populations on campus before others. So I think that it's perfectly possible that it was happening in the 80s in some places, and that it becomes a dominant culture over a decade or so.
Yeah. So what about, Melissa has college-age students or soon-to-be-in-college children. What should parents talk to their children about before they go off to school?
You know, I had a young woman come up to me after a talk I gave at a university not too long ago, and she sort of waited for most everyone else to filter out of the room, and then she burst into tears, and she said, "I thought there was something wrong with me." And she was referring to the fact that she didn't like casual sex. And I think one of the things we need to be making sure young people understand is that not everyone's the same. And whatever they feel, whatever appeals to them, is okay. It doesn't necessarily make them a problem. So if they prefer some other kind of relating with their peers, then they don't have to try to force themselves into the mold that hookup culture tells them they should be in. And further, that whatever sexual choice they decide to make, that they deserve to be treated with respect and with full acknowledgement of their personhood and with care, always, no matter what. I was really stunned in doing the research how much students had accepted the idea that if it was casual sex, they were entitled to no sort of consideration by their partner. And so I think those would be two really important messages to send. Number one, you are okay just like you are. And number two, you deserve to be treated well by everyone.
We are talking with Lisa Wade, an associate professor of sociology at Occidental College. She is the author of American Hookup Culture, the new culture of sex on campus. It's American Hookup, the new culture of sex on campus. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking about hookup culture on college campuses, talking about what's really happening, how we got to where we are, why this culture matters. And we'll talk about where do we go from here in just a bit. But we welcome your questions and your own experiences or observations for our guest, Lisa Wade, author of American Hookup, The New Culture of Sex on Campus, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Diane in Tomahawk is with us. Hi, Diane.
Hi. I'd like to ask Dr. Wade where the whole friends with benefits that thing fits in this picture.
Friends with benefits.
Sure. So it's interesting because young people these days are being really innovative about how to arrange both their sexual lives and their relational lives. And so friends with benefits tends to stand as kind of something in between hooking up and a relationship itself. So they're friends, therefore they're supposed to be caring of one another, considerate, you know, happy for one another when good things happen, and sad when bad things happen. So they have this kind of relationship happening, but it's not supposed to be committed, and it's not supposed to be monogamous, even though it's sexual. And a lot of students are interested in this kind of relationship because it seems to protect them from some of the more toxic features of hookup culture. It doesn't often work out that way. It turns out it's pretty difficult to negotiate a friends with benefits relationship that is healthy, just like it's difficult to negotiate any relationship that's healthy. And students have other really interesting ideas as well. So they also participate in relationships that are exclusive, which often means that we're only having sex with one another, but it's not a relationship and we're not romantic and we're not meaning to have some kind of committed relationship or emotional relationship. So they call that exclusive. And a lot of these things have been designed, as I said, either to try to protect them from the more toxic features of hookup culture, or to very slowly transition hooking up relationships into actual relationships, committed relationships. Students, instead of sort of leaping from sexual activity into full-blown committed relationships, have devised a series of baby steps where they very carefully test the water with one another as they move forward. I mean, it's always scary to form relationships with someone else, but it's particularly scary when the culture is saying that what we're doing is ostensibly not about any sort of romantic interest. So how do you actually express romantic interest to someone in that context? The answer is very carefully.
John in Green Bay is with us. Hi, John.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I was in college between 1994 and 1998, and I was curious whether there's any data with respect to trust issues, both men and women, due to this culture, because I did see it. And, I mean, I came from a pretty conservative background, and I do remember three or four occasions where, I thought that there was going to be a relationship, and there was not. And it was really difficult and confusing for me because that was not my experience. Ironically, my wife and I hooked up via this culture. We didn't even know we were participating in that type of culture. My wife now of 20 years, we actually connected that way. And we've been together since then. And when I ask her about it, she's like, she didn't think that I was going to call her back. So I'm just curious, is there any data with respect to long-term trust issues between men and women due to this type of thing where you never know where someone is coming from? That's all.
All right. Lisa?
Yeah, I think that as scholars have gotten a better handle of what's really happening in hookup culture, this question is coming up. And I do think that we're going to start seeing more systematic research on, are there consequences for people in this kind of environment? In my book, there's a story about a student named Farah who she starts hooking up with a guy, and as they often do, they kept hooking up over and over again every week or two. And she starts to develop feelings for him, what they call catching feelings, and but she's afraid to tell him. And she has a lot of practice in hookup culture and is very proud of her ability to navigate it very, very well. And so eventually, as the two of them become increasingly frustrated, the guy she's hooking up with gets brave enough to actually ask her, "Do you like me?" And she looks him straight in the face and said, "No." And she did like him. She liked him a lot. She had spent weeks in her journal talking about how much she liked him. But she couldn't, in the moment, actually like give up the game. She couldn't break off the hard shell that she had put around herself to protect herself in hookup culture. And I talked to her. She was in the first wave of students I studied. So when I was finishing the book, she graduated from college. And I called her up, and we talked on the phone, and she told me that she was still having a really hard time breaking down that hard shell, and that she was trying to figure out how to be less afraid of holding hands with someone. So I think that there is a possibility that there are consequences for this, that students that get hurt maybe withdraw, or that students who get really good at hookup culture actually have a hard time quitting being good at it when they need to.
So, John, thank you very much for sharing your experience and your story. Unusual for two people to be married 20 years that met in a hookup, Lisa?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. like I said, most monogamous relationships on college campuses are starting from a series of hookups. And most students on campus will end up in a relationship. So students are having relationship experiences on college campuses. It's just that they have to participate in hookup culture to get them. And so I think that I saw one study that said that most relationships in America are starting through this kind of hooking up. So I think that that's very, very common and is going to become increasingly so.
Joe in Madison is with us. Hi, Joe.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Since the late 80s, I've been a rape prevention educator, especially talking to males who historically we never talked to about rape prevention, but also about relationships. And what I would say is that we've never raised boys in any organized way, giving them the skills and encouragement to eventually be good lovers, good partners, good fathers. We've focused all that attention on girls, you know, forcing them to play with dolls, you might say, and never giving boys dolls, you know, to be good fathers eventually. And the same, I'd say, with lovers. And hookup culture is just a new name for male-identified and male-defined sex. It's, you know, there's not necessarily an emotional component. And that's the kind of sex that has always been in my own life, and I'm over 60, but it has always been held out to boys as not only normal, but good.
Lisa?
Yes, that's right. And the difference is that these days it's held out to girls and women as normal and good, too. And so there's nobody left on campus defending the things about sexuality and relationships that we define as feminine. So there's nobody left on campus to hold up and value things like caring and relating to one another and being responsible to one another. And this is creating a community where those kinds of values are very rarely expressed. And that's part of why both men and women are finding it unpleasant, because it turns out that nobody in a human body is comfortable trying to have no emotions. It's just not part of how we work. So to try to suppress all those feelings is difficult for almost everyone. And in terms of education, we need to continue to push to have better sex education in this country, but we also need to start doing a better job teaching young people how to relate to one another, how to be accountable to one another. And that's something that we're really failing on in a big way.
Yeah, so how do we do that?
Well, I think that we're really good at teaching young people how to be kind to one another outside of a sexual context. Actually, we begin in, you know, when they're children, and we teach them how to say please and thank you and I'm sorry and can I give you a hug? You know, would you like to do this with me or not? And don't hit anybody and don't force people to do things. So I think we actually are pretty good at teaching young people how to be kind to one another. And we are often kind in very casual ways. A lot of times students are nicer to the cashier at a convenience store than they are to the person that they had sexual contact with the day before. Much of what we need to do is just instill in young people that there's nothing special or unspecial about sexual contact that means that suddenly it's okay to violate all the rules of courtesy and benevolence in our society. We need to just remind them that sex is a part of life just like all the other parts of life, and the same rules apply.
Let's fit one more call in. Dave in Walworth. Oh, Dave in Walworth left. But I think he was going to say that we should be, parents in particular, maybe schools, teaching kids this at a much younger age. I guess in our final moments, so where do we go from here, Lisa Wade?
Well, I would, of course, love to see a much healthier conversation about sexuality happening at every age, both for students before they get into college, but also for the rest of us who go forward in life after college or don't go to college at all. I would love to see healthier conversations about sex in America. For college, I think a couple things need to happen. One is, I think that the institutions themselves, the colleges and universities, they need to clear the way for students to build healthier sexual cultures. And they need to do that by giving students real information about what each other wants. And we have the data, right? For example, that more than 70% of students want relationships. They need to give students that information, and they need to even the playing field. So they need to look around at the institution and say, which students here have greater power to control the social and sexual lives of their peers? And then they need to intervene and make sure that some students don't hold more power than others. And then I think they need to get out of the way, because young people have all a diverse range of interests and desires. They're more tolerant of diversity than any generation previous to them. They have really good ideas about how to make for more equitable and healthier lives, and they're incredibly smart and sophisticated about what they're experiencing. So if they just had the knowledge and they were empowered to actually change their own sexual cultures, I believe that they could. And I'd be really interested and optimistic about what would come out of that exercise.
Thank you very much for being with us, Lisa Wade, author of American Hookup.